Welcome back. You're listening to Cross the Border, and today we're going through the book of Daniel, and we're in chapter 7. We left off, we were talking about the bearer of Daniel's dream vision that he had. So we're going to pick up where we left off. We were talking about, where did we leave off here? Oh yes, the idea that the words in the original language support the idea that the vision is an ongoing process from and including the time of Daniel and continues into the future. Therefore, there's no need to look to the future of Daniel for the beginning of the four kingdoms. They had already begun with Babylon. The kingdom after Babylon was the Medo-Persians, and the next after them was the Greek Empire of Alexander the Great, and the final kingdom of the four was the Romans. Some have suggested that the four beasts represent four concurrent kingdoms that existed at that time, but we reject that. So with that, we're gonna move on to the next beast of Daniel's dream vision, and that would be, let's go back to our scriptural reference here and take a look. Okay, we have the lion, we covered the bear. And in the verse 6, he says, "After this I beheld, and lo, another, like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it." And that's plainly all that Daniel says about it. The leopard, the beast like a leopard, had the four wings of a fowl, and it also had four heads. Let's see what we can discover about that. This beast represents Greece or Macedonia. How do we know that it represents Greece or Macedonia? This beast is the third in a series that represented kingdoms that began with Babylon. It is known that Babylon, the lion in the vision, was conquered by the Medes and the Persians, the bear in the vision, who in turn were conquered by Alexander the Great's army, the four-headed leopard in the vision. The sequence of kingdoms tells the story. This changeover from one dominant kingdom to another exemplifies the succession principle. The four wings suggest very rapid conquest, and that's from the what we call the characteristics principle, because the leopard had four wings. That's a characteristic. They occur on the back of the leopard, indicating that they apply to the time represented by the body. Alexander the Great did, in fact, conquer very rapidly, just as the image would suggest. The four heads clearly represent the time of the four divisions of the empire originally created by Alexander the Great. Note the four heads all occur together, indicating the kingdoms also occur together and are to be seen as concurrent with one another. The heads on the body are all leopards, so likewise the original kingdom was Grecian, and the split up of the empire was also Grecian. This one could say that the heads were of a like nature to the body because the heads represented political kingdoms or powers just like the body was. And that we call that the similarity principle. And we discussed all these principles over the last couple days. So this makes a lot of sense. Note that the heads represented smaller, weaker kingdoms. And that's the difference principle. The split up of the kingdom into four parts after the death of Alexander the Great demonstrates the Miller principle, which says that the body of a beast with multiple heads is used to represent the time period of the initial kingdom. Here, the initial kingdom was created by Alexander the Great, and the multiple heads are used to represent the time period, or the passage of time, so a time period that of the kingdoms that follow afterwards, which are a result of the breakup or division of power of the initial kingdom. Daniel 8 shows a goat that symbolizes the same thing as a leopard. It says the following about it. We won't get too far into Daniel 8 because we will get there when we get there. And the rough goat is the king of Greece, the Grecian empire, the same thing. And the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king, so that would be Alexander the Great. Now, that being broken, whereas four stood up for it, and we see the same thing here, the similarity principle. Four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but not in his power. So when we get to Daniel, the next chapter, we realize that we have the same kingdom represented by a goat. So why is a leopard used to represent Greece? After all, God could have used a giant boa constrictor, maybe a hyena. A hyena has some of the most powerful jaws to territorial kingdom, so it surely would be seen as a strong, fierce, cunning predator, but instead a leopard was used. As a predator, a leopard has to be very smart to survive. It is fast, stealthy, and sneaks up on its prey and then suddenly pounces on it. Sometimes it will hide in a tree and wait for the unsuspecting prey to come by underneath, and it will drop down upon it and kill it. It uses its claws to hold the prey under control and subdue it, then grasp the throat of the victim and with its sharp teeth to suffocate it, thereby attacking the most vulnerable exposed part of the body of its prey. Death usually comes relatively rapidly this way. Sometimes it will kill by biting the back of the neck with the intent of breaking the neck. After the prey is dead, it will tear it to shreds and consume it. This is comparable to Alexander the Great, who was a very smart general and possessed all of the characteristics, which shows that the characteristics of the beast do tell us something about the behavior of a power or what a power would do, which is embodied in the characteristics principle. So as you can see, the first king, Alexander the Great, is broken off. He dies, and four come up after him. In history, when Alexander the Great died, his half-brother took the throne. Consequently, there was a second king in this empire, but he was mentally unstable and considered unfit to rule. So military generals fought each other for the kingdom, but finally divided it and parted ways. There were seven top military commanders of Alexander the Great who initially fought among themselves for the empire, but in the end, only four got anything. So we'll move on from there. And that's enough detail on that. If you do a search, you can find a lot of these things out for yourself. So let's move on to the fourth beast. Daniel continues and in verse 7 of chapter 7. And after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and broke in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse from all of the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. Very interesting. We aren't told what kind of beast this is, but it was different from all of those before it. So we get a lot of characteristics here. And it was dreadful and terrible. And that's the kind of beast it was. It wasn't a leopard. It wasn't a lion. It wasn't a bear. But it was dreadful and terrible. So let's see if we can use the principles that we discussed yesterday and the day before to figure out who this beast was and what it was. And also, we have history. We already know who the beast is. So why is a dreadful-looking beast used to represent Rome, pagan Rome? Consider that many other beasts could have been used, maybe an elephant, yet that is not what is done so far as we know. Why is this animal without a species name? Consider that the description of the beast is another example of the characteristics principle being applied. This beast is said to devour and crush and stamp what was left with its feet, and also, which was different from all of them, very frightening, whose teeth were of iron and its nails bronze. This describes its behavior, what it would do when it was attacked. When it attacked, you might say, this is a description of its method of attack. Rome did have a policy that it would respond with overwhelming force against any rebellion, and it tended to do this very well. Of course, it was much more successful in doing this than the Persians were, but its troop training and battle equipment was superior to that of the Persians. The important point is that its behavior was described quite accurately by the description of the beast itself. It could indeed devour and crush its enemies with those iron teeth. Rome was known for its use of iron weapons, which gave it an edge over its enemy. Stamping on its enemy with its feet, with feet that had brass claws perhaps, is a reference to its tendency to completely destroy any opposition by smashing it totally. The fact that it was not given a species name, but was described as very frightening, again tells us something about its behavior. It would seem that something that is frightening like this would be very intimidating, and history bears out that Rome was very intimidating to the nations it conquered. For example, in 168 BC, Antiochus Epiphanes IV was in the process of invading Egypt. He was met by a representative of the Roman Senate who informed Antiochus Epiphanes that the Romans were demanding that he withdraw from Egypt, then drew a circle in the sand around Antiochus Epiphanes and told him not to leave it until he made up his mind to cease the invasion and leave Egypt. History records that he stopped the invasion of Egypt and went home to Syria. The danger posed by Rome must have been quite frightening, for this man simply withdrew without a fight against the Romans and ran home. You can be sure it was quite difficult for him to accept this, because he had gone through all the expense and difficulties of an invasion of Egypt, and yet he left. Hence, this prophecy of Rome as a dangerous and frightening power was clearly fulfilled in this and many other incidents. Daniel was also told that this beast would be different than all before it. What did this mean? How was it different than all before it? The others had one thing in common, which is all of them were ruled by kings. But Rome did not share that characteristic with them, because Rome experimented with six different forms of government before it broke up in 476 AD. If you think carefully about this, notice that God had not said anything about the form of governments of the previous kingdoms. He was silent, almost as if he had this unwritten rule about the other kingdoms. But with this one, he changes the rule and only then notifies you of his existence by informing you that it was being changed. The statement that the fourth dreadful beast is diverse from all those who went before it is an example of the exception principle being applied, which means that whatever rule was in effect up until the exception is stated is now obsolete, and the new rule takes place from this point on for this power. I hope the pieces are coming together for you as they are for me, especially when we consider that the Roman Empire that began with this great and terrible beast, even though it split up in time, as we see from the heads and the horns, that still the body is Roman. And we see this in even the land where I live in America, which has Roman-style governments throughout the land. So we see that this beast, which is represented by the body, is now being broken up, but still the characteristics exist even today, and they exist over the whole earth. Another aspect of this kingdom that made it different than those that went before it was that it conquered most of Europe. Previous kingdoms did not succeed in doing that for various reasons. Babylon never approached Europe. The Persians tried to take over Europe, but were stopped by the Greeks. The Greeks seem to have gone from Greece eastward all the way to India, but apparently did not go west or north into Europe, though some recent discoveries suggest they may have planted colonies on mainland Italy. So Rome was different in this aspect from the beginning. Again, this reflects the use of the characteristics principle. The beast evidently had one head with iron teeth. The Bible only mentions the iron teeth, so it seems reasonable that there is a head. So it does not mention two or more heads, and teeth without a head would look ridiculous. It originally had 10 horns, but after them, another horn came up. Horns coming up after other previously existing horns, another form of the Miller principle, which this other horn that came up after, it had a mouth and eyes like a man and spoke great words against God. We'll refer to this horn that talked as the talking horn because of its behavior. Some people refer to it as the little horn power, which is the same thing. This new talking horn was responsible for uprooting 3 of the original 10 horns. The author shows, okay, you can see where they broke off. Okay, yeah, we talked about that. Rome was known as a particularly cruel empire, but it also created a peace that had not existed before then, something that many businessmen no doubt appreciated. Because Rome had a policy that it would respond with overwhelming force against any rebellion. That sounds like America, maybe thinking of the Civil War, perhaps. Very Roman, isn't it? And talk about overwhelming response, man. It was no civil war, I'll tell you. There was nothing civil about it. It was more like the Roman crush and grinding and stamping the residue with its feet, was it not? Okay, because Rome had a policy that would respond with overwhelming force against any rebellion, it forced a peace among the peoples it governed. Because of the peace that Rome forced into the region, and because of a more reasonable justice system with laws better than any other countries, many people respected Rome. Several kingdoms were in fact quietly handed over to Rome because of this. For example, the Attalid Empire, centered in Pergamum, was willed by its last king to Rome in 133 BC. Bithynia was also willed to Rome in 75 or 74 BC when its last king died. Another history. Okay. Pergamum, the capital of the Attalid Empire, is near the northwest seacoast of Asia Minor, just to the south across the strait from an area once known as Thrace. And we won't get into those details, but you get the idea of the peace that Rome brought. Rome also conquered the remnants of the Greek empires that came up out of the empire of Alexander the Great. This conquest of the Greek empires began when Rome took Asia Minor away from the Seleucid Empire in 188 BC. But this was only the first step and did not do away with any of the 3 remaining Greek empires that resulted from the split of Alexander the Great's empire. So we get the idea that Rome was this fourth beast and the characteristic principles in Rome. In 31 BC, the Roman general Octavian defeated the Ptolemy Empire in the naval battle of Actium, and it goes on. In 30 BC, he attacked Alexandria. Mark Antony and Cleopatra committed suicide, and Egypt became another province of Rome, and on it goes. So we learned that Rome lived up to the characteristics from Daniel's dream vision. Now, the talking horn. Let's go to the talking horn. And who is it? This is very interesting. The horn with the mouth and the eyes that spoke against God has been believed by many to represent the papacy, which certainly got legal powers it did not have after the date historians note as the end of the Roman Empire, 476 AD. So as he came up afterwards and 3 fell before it. The papacy certainly existed before the fall of Rome, but the symbol of the horn coming up after the other 10 horns began to have their day of power is trying to show us that the time when it had legal power to work against God is what is represented here, which began in 538 AD. It is not trying to show us that it existed only after 476 AD, for it certainly did exist before then. To understand exactly what happened in 538 AD that makes it significant, the reader needs to know some history and basic facts of government. These facts of government are as follows. One, decrees or laws issued by a government are only applicable to territory they control. So if you don't control a territory, you cannot apply laws there as they are unenforceable. Two, even if you reside and control a territory, you cannot control another territory unless you back it up by force of arms. And three, to be able to communicate with that other territory, both of these factors must exist for government to be able to enforce law upon any given territory. So with these facts in mind, the papal power over other bishops and the power to punish heresy was given to the Pope as a matter of legal right in the spring of 538 AD after Justinian's general, Belisarius, managed to break the siege of Rome by the Ostrogoths, which lasted from March 537 to March 538. Belisarius first entered Rome in December 536 when the Ostrogoths abandoned Rome as he entered it, but he had to immediately begin preparations for a siege that he knew was coming and facing an enemy with probably 10 times as many troops. This would leave him little time for setting up and running Roman law administration. So consequently, it is extremely probable that he did not get that done. Once the siege began, virtually nobody could leave the city. So any laws that Justinian had made that were to be generally applicable and enforceable outside the city by the Pope or anyone else were simply not enforceable. And we're going to have to continue here after the break. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Cross the Border. And do visit my website, crosstheborder.org. I would like to hear from you, so send me an email.